WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We thought you'd enjoy spending the Thanksgiving holiday in the company of one of America's most revered folk musicians, Doc Watson. Before we feature our 1988 interview, here's an excerpt of our 1989 concert.
I think we'll do one that Merle and I, my son Merle and I, learned from John Hurt. A good old tune called Make Me Down a Pallet on Your Floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down, make it soft and low, and then maybe my good gal, she won't know. I'm going up the country through that sleet and snow. Going up the country through that sleet and snow. Yes, I'm going up the country through that sleet and snow. Ain't no telling just how far I'll go. Getting my breakfast here and my dinner in Tennessee. Get breakfast here and dinner in Tennessee. Gonna get my breakfast here, my dinner in Tennessee. Told you I was coming, so you better look for me. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down, make it soft and low. And then maybe my good gal, she won't know. What do you think about it, Jack? I like that notion right there. Well, you know that I can't lay down on your bed. Now, honey, I can't lay down on your bed. No, baby, can't lay down across that pretty bed. Cause my good woman, she might kill me dead. And don't you let my good gal catch you here. Hey, don't you let my good gal catch you here. If you do, she may shoot you. She might cut and stop you too. Ain't no telling what that gal might do. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down, make it soft and low. Then maybe my good gal, she won't know. Sleeping, my back and shoulders tired. The way I've been sleeping, my back and shoulders tired. Yeah, the way I've been sleeping, my back and shoulders tired. I think I'll turn and try sleeping on my side. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down, make it soft and low. And then maybe my good gal, she won't know. Let's play some country counterpoint, son. Down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, make it over. Close behind that door. Make it where your good man will never go.
All right.
That's Doc Watson along with Jack Lawrence. We'll have more of that concert coming up in the second half of today's program. Doc Watson is the guitarist who's usually called the single finest flat picker in the country. The only argument you're likely to get about that is from people who don't want to praise his playing at the expense of praising his singing. Throughout much of his three-decade career, Watson performed and toured with his son, guitarist Merle Watson. In 1985, Merle was tragically killed in a tractor accident. Doc Watson is only performing occasionally these days, about a half dozen times a year, but he continues to record. In the last few years, he's put out recordings of gospel tunes, kids' songs, and a collection of old-time Southern songs. And every April in North Carolina, Doc Watson holds a music festival in Merle's memory. Doc Watson was born in Deep Gap, North Carolina. His father was a musician, although not a professional performer, but he introduced Doc to playing by making him his first banjo.
That was in the summer of 1934. Made my first little stringed instrument. I had a harmonica before that. But Dad showed me a few of the old-time Fralin or Clawhammer banjo-style tunes, and one day he brought it to me and put it in my hands and said, "Son, I want you to learn to play this thing real well. Some of these days we'll get you a better one." He said, "Might help you get through the world."
And what was it like for you the first time you got the banjo into your hands? What did you do with it?
I remember how I felt, but I don't remember hardly what it was like learning the first tunes. It was kind of hard for Dad to show me because I couldn't see his hands. But he finally got across to me how to do the licks on the banjo and how to note the thing. And I could figure out where the notes were because it was fretless. And you could slide along with your fingers, and finally you come to the right one, you know, and you found out how to get there without missing them.
So you were really pretty self-taught.
For the most part, yes, I was. The guitar, absolutely, I was self-taught.
How did you get your first guitar?
One spring, my dad told my youngest brother and I, "Boys, if you'll cut all those dead chestnut, small dead chestnuts down along the road and around the edge of the field there, you can sell it for pulpwood to the tannery." And we went at it, and we cut a couple of big truckloads. It didn't make us a mint of money, but it made me enough to buy me a good little guitar from, well, I thought it was good at the time, from Sears Roebuck, and my younger brother ordered him a suit of clothes.
Now, considering that your early instruments were homemade banjos and a mail-order guitar, did you ever get really obsessed with the quality of instruments that you were playing? Some musicians just play what they have, and others get really obsessed with having instruments that are just right for them or custom-made for them.
I was fairly contented with what I had. I never had had my hands on a good guitar back in those days and didn't for years. The first good guitar that I got hold of that I would have considered much better than my mail order box was a Martin guitar that Richard Green used to have a little music store under his, he had a boarding house or an inn there in Boone. And I went in there one day with that little mail order thing, and he said, "Why don't you let me help you get you a good guitar?" And I said, "Gosh, it costs too much." And he said, "I'll tell you what I can do. I can get you a good Martin D18 that will be a price that you can afford, and I'll take the payments down to $5 a month." And I couldn't beat that. I paid it off quicker than that, but I couldn't beat that with a stick. And at that time, I was playing at the little fruit stand and a little bean market they had in Boone and making me a few shekels on Saturday, having a good time of picking, and I paid for the guitar that summer. He got me that thing at his cost, and it cost $90. Oh, Lord, I was proud of that guitar. But in all truth, compared to my guitar now, it was like fretting a fence. It was really hard to play.
Well, I guess it's almost good in a way to get used to something like that because it makes it seem so much easier when you get a good guitar.
Oh, it really does. And when I got into the folk revival in the 60s, I ran into people who could set a guitar action up to where you could play it. And I came on to another Martin along about that time. Played a Gibson at first on the road, borrowed. And then I came into another Martin and the action was brought down to where you could play it.
My guest is Doc Watson. You know, I'm glad you brought up the folk revival. It was really during the folk revival that you started to become nationally known. I think you'd been playing dances and you know, playing
in your
area.
I played rockabilly music through the 50s and played an electric guitar, Les Paul.
Well, see, this really interests me. You were playing rockabilly and an electric guitar.
Mm-hmm. Rockabilly and old pop standards with an old boy named Jack Williams. Jack had a little group together, and when he heard me pick, he said, "Buddy, I want you to pick with me."
Well, I want to play something that was recorded by Ralph Rinsler. Ralph Rinsler recorded it. You were performing.
In my living room. In my living room, yeah.
And this is a recording. It was from the early 1960s, and this is Everyday Dirt. Tell us a little bit about the song before we hear this.
A fellow, David McCarn, was living in a mill town, Gastonia, North Carolina, and he heard about some recording sessions going on down, I think it was Knoxville, Tennessee. And he probably slung his guitar over his back, knowing how those poor old boys fared. He and a fella Howard, I've forgotten his given name, went over to Knoxville and recorded a bunch of things, and Everyday Dirt was one of the songs that happened in our little record collection when I was a little boy. And those words are just, oh, you know, they're automatic. I didn't even have to think about the lyrics on that. I did have to work at picking it. I learned it off the old 78 record that McCarran recorded.
Okay, so from the early 1960s, this is my guest, Doc Watson.
Now John come home, all in a wonder. He rattled at the door just like thunder. Who is that, Mr. Henley cried? 'Tis my husband you must hire. Then John sat down by the fireside weeping, and up that chimney he got to peeping. There he saw that poor old soul setting up a straddle of the pot rack pole. John built on a rousing fire just to suit his own desire. His wife got out with a free good will. Don't do that for the man you'll kill. Then John drenched up and down he fetched him like a coon. When a dog had catched him, he blacked his eyes and then did better. Kicked him out right on his setter. Then his wife, she crawled in under the bed, and he pulled her out by the hair of the head. And when I'm gone, remember then, he kicked her where the chinches had been.
Recorded in the early 1960s, that's my guest, Doc Watson. How did you learn how to pick that way? We found out that you were self-taught, but it seems like it would be really hard to teach yourself an intricate style like
Well, by listening to the old records, you could hear, after you got familiarized with the instrument, you could hear what strings they were hitting on and what chord they were playing in just by the sound. After all, music is sound. And I think if anybody learns the guitar properly, they shouldn't, as soon as they can get to where they can't, stop looking at the neck and play without doing that, unless it's something really hard that you're first getting into. You know, you need to memorize the distances and the jumps on the neck. As I said, music is sound, and I could tell what the guy was doing, the little slide licks on there where he goes down to a certain note and then jumps back up there. All the chords are sound to me. It's like you reading something once I was familiar with the guitar.
My guest is Doc Watson, who is one of America's foremost folk and country performers. We're going to talk more after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Guitarist and singer Doc Watson is my guest. Once you went on the road during the folk revival, now you weren't used to traveling. There must have been a lot you learned had to learn how to do. Did you have a business manager to help you out with bookings? And
Ralph Frenzler did the bookings between he and Manny Greenhill of Folklore Productions. But Ralph traveled a lot with me, and if he didn't, when I went go to New York to work in the city, I came by Trailways bus. Someone would always meet me at the Port Authority and take me over to Ralph's apartment. I worked lots of times. I'd work at Gertie's Folk City a week or 2 weeks at a time, doing either opening act or just playing the job straight there. It was scary. I was as green as a green apple as far as the city. Country boy, you know, really.
Oh, yeah, sure.
As the old timers used to say, a hay seed for sure. But I... the scary part finally, and the adventure finally got over with, and that road, it became a job.
Yeah,
music,
I see what
music,
you mean.
A good audience, I love.
I think there's always clubs who, not many, but there's always some clubs willing to take advantage of a performer, and I would guess that someone who was blind was a more likely target if they didn't have people who were watching out for them. Would you ever have any problems with that?
I was glad when my son Merle started on the road with me, because if we went to a place and they didn't treat me too good, Dad, we won't come back here anymore. And that was the end of it. I'd tell Manny, I'd tell Mr. Greenhill, don't book that anymore. That was the end of it. We didn't hit too many places that they weren't really decent to us, but once in a great while there, of course, I won't call any names because we're on nationwide radio. But we were in a few places where they treated you like pieces of used equipment. And that was the end of playing there. We just didn't do it again. That's the best thing you can do, you know, is not tolerate that. just move away.
You mentioned your son Merle. Did you teach him how to play guitar?
No. Merle didn't show any interest in the guitar until he was 15. I was on my first concert tour, a little solo concert tour that spring. And about midways of it, Ralph called me and said, "Doc, I've got some good news." And I said, "Well, lay it on me." And he said, "Merle has started playing the guitar. His mother, Rosalie, started him on the guitar. She taught him his first chords and showed him how to play them and a little bit about timing, and he just took it and went with it." And we met John Hurt for the first time that same summer. We went to the Berkeley Folk Festival, and Merle played backup guitar for me. He'd only been playing about 3 months, and he played backup guitar on the stage. And when we met John Hurt, Merle was enthralled by John's finger style on the guitar. And he took that and added a few little notions of his own, and that's where Merle's picking style, finger style, came from.
So he never felt that he had to work hard to differentiate his style from your style?
Merle, once in a while he'd ask me for some pointers on a melody to a song or something, but Merle played his very own thing on the guitar. I don't think he even ever asked me how to hold the pick. He probably looked at the way I held it. But I never really sat down and taught him how you get this note or that note. I just played a song and sang it, and he jumped in there and learned the lead to it.
When your son Merle died, was it hard for you to go back on the road afterwards?
if you'll pardon a little intimacy here, I'll tell you something that happened or I wouldn't have. Between the time he was killed and his funeral, I dreamed I was in a dark desert, and it was so hot you couldn't breathe. And the sand was pulling me down like if you were in quicksand. And that big, strong hand reached back and said, "Come on, Dad, you can make it." And he brought me, led me out to where it was cool, but there was sunny, but there was a cool breeze. And I waked up and I thought, "Well, I'll try." And I took up the last job on that particular tour that we'd canceled. And my friend Jack Lawrence had been working some while Merle was off the road with us for quite a while, and Jack stayed on as the other guitarist. And I'm kind of glad I did. If I had stayed off the road a month, I never would have come back. It was so hard, you know. You couldn't know Terry, but it was really hard to go back out there without him.
But I guess that dream kind of gave you permission
I believe it was godsend, I think, the dream was.
I want to play a record with you and Merle performing, and this is from an album you recorded together, the Doc Watson, Merle Watson guitar album, and this is Talking to Casey, and Merle Watson is featured on slide guitar.
Casey.
Doc and Merle Watson. Doc Watson is my guest. You know, can I ask you a question that I hope you don't mind me asking? And if you do, don't answer it. A lot of performers who are blind wear dark glasses when they perform, and that's something you've never done.
I don't know why. I always hated, used to have had a good bit of light perception. Doesn't bother me now because most of it's gone. But the reflection off sunglasses, you know how it'll come in on the sides. I guess they make them now, it won't do it. But boy, they used to try to get me to wear them. I reckon they didn't like the way my eyes looked. A lot of people would say you ought to wear sunglasses. I hated them. I wouldn't do it. And I just never have worn them. I don't know if the blind that wear them, their eyes look really abnormal or what. I don't know. I never did care to wear them, just didn't do it.
Right.
No particular reason except what I told you.
Yeah, well, I could certainly understand that. I mean, I don't understand why they need to be worn by, I guess it's preference, just whether you want to wear them or not.
I suppose, yeah.
One last thing, you know, there's a really nice recording on the album that we heard earlier from the early 60s of you and your wife singing together. Does she still sing? Do you ever sing together?
She doesn't sing anymore or play anymore. The tragedy of losing Merle, Terry, has just about undone her. She does the office work there at home, but she's not Rosalie anymore. Bless her little heart. I don't know, sometimes I just want to cry. And, you know, especially when I'm away from her, I do, when I think about it. I try not to and try to encourage her what I can, but it's been tough on her, and she can't seem to get over the loss. The grief really has her yet.
Yeah, I can understand. Well, you'll be able to spend more time together when you retire. I regret we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming, for talking with us about music, and thank you very much, and I hope you have a good continuing year on the road.
I'll guarantee you, it's been a pleasure.
Doc Watson, in an interview recorded in 1988. After our interview, everyone at Fresh Air hoped Doc Watson would return sometime for a concert. He did, the following year. We'll hear that concert in the second part of today's program. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.